to Green Left Radio. And for our program today, we're very happy to have Carl Winter and Jim McElroy not in the studio, but on the line today. They have recently returned from a trip to the Pilliga, where they joined a car convoy through the forest and visited kind of various kind of coal seam gas drilling sites and spillage areas. To give a bit of a kind of background, there's an ongoing campaign in New South Wales against Santos's plans. And Santos is planning to drill over 850 coal seam gas wells in the iconic Pilliga Forest in northwest New South Wales. The gas project, which is currently being assessed by the New South Wales Independent Planning Commission, is a threat to the forest itself and to the future of the planet because gas is a dangerous kind of fossil fuel. So I guess we have Jim and Carl on here to give a bit of background, and I may to start off, can you give a bit of background on this whole issue, especially to someone who might have not heard about what Santos is kind of planning to do to the iconic kind of Pilliga Forest in northwest New South Wales?
Okay, I'll speak to that, Jacob. Well, what happened is, to go back to the very beginning, I mean, people have forgotten maybe that in 2010, Dart Energy was going to frack St. Peter's, a suburb of Sydney. It's only 6 kilometres from CBD. And so that alerted a lot of people in Sydney to what was going to happen. And they had, Dart Energy had a licence to frack 60% of New South Wales. So that was when all this sort of started way back in 2010. And we launched a campaign. We educated ourselves about coal seam gas and about unconventional fracking. And so we were able to stop it with a massive campaign. So Santos has had this campaign or struggle or fight to frack. It's Narrabri and the Pilliga Forest between Narrabri and Coonabarabran. And what happened is they tried to get a whole lot of farmers up there to be able to frack on their land, but they locked the gate, had campaigned against, had educated farmers and the local people up there in northwestern New South Wales about the dangers of coal seam gas and what had happened up in the Pilliga, up in Queensland, in Chinchilla. And so they launched a massive campaign. So everybody became educated about what coal seam gas would do to their farmlands and the dangers and, you know, and all the problems. So then what happened was the Santos applied to get frack the Pilliga Forest, which is this huge, I think it's about 100,000 hectares, a huge temperate forest, the largest temperate forest left on the eastern coast of Australia, with all sorts of wonderful plants, trees, and also endangered species of mouse and bats, and it's also a habitat for koalas. And involved in this is a lot of corruption because John Anderson of the Country Party, he had big shares in an oil gas company up there, and he sold this to Santos. For something like $600 million, some incredible amount of money, which he would have got a huge cut a license to frack the Pilliga. So that's where it all started, and we've been fighting it since then. This would be, if they get permission to go ahead with this, this would be the first time in 19 years, I think, that they've been able to. The first time in 19 years that there's such a project has been given permission to go ahead. So at the moment, what's happened is that it went to the Department of Planning and Environment and Heritage in New South Wales, and they gave the go-ahead for it with a really, really deficient report on the whole situation, and the taking not into account any of the environmental desecrations that this would cause. and a whole lot of other things. And because of that, was then sent by the New South Wales Liberal government, Berejiklian, to the Independent Planning Commission, which to have hearings about whether it should proceed or not. And so in the end of July, they were allowed 5 days for submissions from people to make their complaints about this project. And they got an overwhelming number of written submissions, 24,000. It's the largest number of submissions ever given into an Independent Planning Commission hearing, plus over 400 oral submissions. And so they had to extend the hearing from 5 days to 7 days because there were so many applications. And then because of the overwhelming, I'll go into that a little bit later, the overwhelming 98% of the submissions were against the proposal. They then Santos, who had put in such a weak and poor analysis and submission on the project, they then submitted a whole new sort of proposals with a few changes after the submissions had closed to the IPC. So now they've opened up again to give the community a chance to reply to Santos's new document, and that's where it stands at the moment. They will make a decision in about the end of September, when it was supposed to come out like at the beginning of September. So that's where it stands at the moment.
Yeah. Well, next question I guess I want to ask is, Kate, what can you tell us, I guess, about your recent kind of trip to the Pilliga, and I guess what you kind of learned from that?
Okay. Thanks, Jacob. It was a real eye-opener going up to, we went up by train to Narrabri, and it's interesting to see the difference. I mean, let's face it, the country areas now are divided on the question of not only gas but coal mining, because Narrabri town itself, I think there's quite a strong support in the town for Santos, because Santos is in a bogus fashion, just like Adani in Queensland, saying there's going to be all these jobs created for locals, and that is rubbish. It's not going to happen. Most of the labour brought in will probably be FIFO brought in anyway. But we also went, so the Pilliga Forest is basically between, it's both sides of the Newell Highway in northwest New South Wales, and then at the south is Coonabarabran, which is another sort of country town, which is pretty well overwhelmingly against the Pilliga digging up of coal by Santos, because they see it as a threat. And what has happened is that a large number of farming communities have come out against it and are strongly against it. And that's what we're seeing all over the country, including in Queensland, where it's gone furthest of all. And in addition to that, the Aboriginal community has taken a stand strongly against Santos, because they see the destruction of the Pilliga Forest is going to be terrible for the forest, but also for so many of the sacred sites that they have in the forest. And we did get to see some of that. We can say something more about that later. So what happened was we basically hired a four-wheel drive and drove through the area and visited various sites. And there's a really good little place called Pilliga Pottery, where I recommend people to go, because the woman there, Maria Rickett, who is interviewed in the Green Left Weekly a couple of weeks ago, I urge people to look up the website. She's strongly against it, and the community is against it. The Pilliga Forest is an ancient forest. Australia has destroyed, I think it's something like well over two-thirds of its forests already since the white colonial authorities have arrived in this country. We've pretty well wiped out large amounts of the forest. But Pilliga is interesting. It's not like it's a temperate forest. It's not a rainforest. And when you look at it, I'm sure some of the supporters of Santos will say, well, that's a straggy looking place, but the trees are, you know, quite different and unique to that particular area. It's a huge area, and we managed to get on a car convoy organised by two of the local activists, Dan Lanzini from the Northwest Protection Advocacy, and also Councillor Cody Brady, who's an Indigenous man from the local area, who's taken a very strong stand against Santos. So, yeah, the trip we took through the forest was extremely interesting. We saw some of the sites. We saw what's going to happen with the drill sites where they're going to have flares on stands, which are going to be sort of like 100 metres in the air. They'll be on top of towers. It's, apart from anything else, among other things, is a fire danger on top of the normal fire danger we're seeing with the drying up of the forest. Having these flares is going to be a massive threat. The flares have also caused controversy because in the Warrumbungle Mountains, which are another unique area sort of south of Cootamundra, Coonabarabran, we have the Siding Spring Telescope, which is a very unique part of a worldwide network of scopes, which plays a crucial role. And some scientists from that facility have warned that the light from these flares could in fact endanger the whole work of the Siding Spring Observatory, which would be a terrible loss from a scientific point of view, but also even from the local community point of view, because something like, you know, half the jobs in the Coonabarabran area are related to that that facility. Yeah, so we travelled through the forest and we saw the sites. We saw spill sites where the toxic waste from the coal seam gas, which is one of the issues they don't really tackle, has already, but you can see with your own eyes that the forest and the undergrowth there is poisoned, and Dan and Cody showed us exactly the poisoned areas and how the Santos was trying to grow back new undergrowth, but it was dying immediately, and these poisoned areas are growing. There are also large storage dams, which are also going to be toxic. So, yeah, apart from the fact that coal seam gas itself, we don't need it. Economically, we don't need it. And certainly from the point of view of combating climate change, we certainly don't need it. It is causing a massive destruction of the forest.
Oh, sorry, following on from that, what can you tell us about the campaign against building coal seam gas in the Pilliger? Who are the forces that are involved? What about like the role of First Nations activists?
Well, there's two main groups. There's Lock the Gate, who are organising it from sort of the urban areas and building a big campaign in the whole eastern coast of Australia. And then there's also the Northwest Alliance, who are organising it from the local area, the local farmers and the local Gamilaroi First Nations people. They had a whole week during the IPC hearing, they had a whole week in which they hired the bowling club up at Narrabri to inform people what was going on, and a centre for sort of activists to go to. So it's a huge campaign, and there's a lot of people involved, a lot of experts and from the universities, hydrologists, farmers and agricultural experts and organic farmers. So it's, what it's done is this campaign has actually for the first time joined together the Aboriginal people and the farmers, as well as the city and the country areas. It's been able to bring together you know, those three groups for the first time. So it's a very active campaign. And even there's a lot of pressure on the RPC to go ahead, to give the go ahead for this, for Santos to drill in the Pilliga Forest. Under pressure from the Liberal governments in Morrison, as well as the Country Party, and as well as the New South Wales Liberal government, Berejiklian. But there's a massive campaign by the communities, both country and city, against this. So even if the IPC give the go-ahead, there will be a reaction to this, and there will be an ongoing campaign to try and stop it by all sorts of means. I mean, the main thing I should also emphasise, it hasn't been brought out, is the danger to the Great Artesian Basin. The Pilliga Forest is a massive recharge area for the Great Artesian Basin, which covers a third of the Australian continent. It is massive. And it's this water that farmers rely on to do any sort of farming up in northern New South Wales, because that whole area is really, really dry. They can only survive because of the Great Artesian Basin. And the danger is that the coal seam gas mining will contaminate that huge volume of water. And so it'll make it unusable. You know, the Great Artesian Basin is the largest in the world, and it's probably taken millions of years to form. And what's happened over the last 150 years that's under colonisation is that those bore waters were just allowed to run continuously. They weren't even capped. It's only been the last few years they've capped them to control the volume. So the whole Great Artesian Basin has been depressurised. And what's happened is we've lost one of the speakers at the IPC from Dubbo talked about how we've lost 1,000 natural springs in New South Wales because of the depressurisation already by the mining companies. So this will be, a further disaster. So the disaster is the contamination of the Great Artesian Basin and loss of water, because they will have to use millions of litres of water from the Great Artesian Basin to continue with this. So it's a massive campaign, and a whole lot of lives are dependent on, a whole lot of livelihoods up in Western New South Wales are dependent on stopping this project. It's a really important big issue here.
Well, Chloe, you wanted to ask a question?
Can I just ask a quick question in case you haven't covered it? If the New South Wales Independent Planning Commission does approve the unconventional gas project, like you mentioned, Coral, it would be the first unconventional gas project to go ahead in 19 years. I just wanted to know what the impact on First Nations people would be. And you did mention in your article, you know, that First Nations people were able to live in the Great Desert of Central Australia for more than 65,000 years because of the health of the Great Artesian Basin. So I just wanted to, maybe you could touch on that. Thanks.
Well, it's the Gamilaroi people have been fighting this since 2013. They directly asked Santos to come and talk to them. There were some wonderful expositions at the hearings by Gamilaroi traditional owners, who, you know, explain the situation. It's got a lot of burial sites there, and we actually visited through Cody and Dan Lanzini. We visited a site where they told us that these were scar trees, where and a mark at the bottom of the tree indicated that was where an Aboriginal First Nations Aboriginal person was buried, and also, but they'd cut out also parts of the tree to make koolamons, what they carry their seeds in, and also there was even one there for a boat, because what we realised, they took us to this place where it was just the last sort of lagoon left, and I imagined it was going to be a large sort of lake area, but it was just this tiny piece of puddle of water where there's still a few of the shells left that they used to eat, the shellfish, and And that used to be, that was a bed of a river, and there used to be a river connecting these two parts of the forest, running right through it. It'd always be a river there that they used to use boats to go up and down. It would have been a paradise. So the Gamilaroi people, especially Dolly, I think her name was Dolly, Dolly Talbot, you know, talked so movingly about that what it would mean to the Gamilaroi people. They've got sacred sites up there. There's some these beautiful sandstone caves in which they would have lived under, and there's all these cavings there, and where they would have also made tools that you can visit. There's also a whole ring of sculptures that have been made recently or in the last, you know, 5 years there that people visit. There's a whole, you can go and visit at Baradine. You can go and visit the Pilliga Forest Discovery Centre, which goes through a lot of the history. But, they have not, Sandals have not consulted the Gamilaroi people. They've even, as Dolly Talbot pointed out, they've even ignored the New South Wales Heritage and Native Title Act in pushing this project to go ahead. They've ignored their own laws and have not consulted the Gamilaroi people at all. They've got a lot of, there's other sacred areas there that are women's business and men's business, and they can't talk about that in sort of written procedures. They need sort of an oral presentation. That's their tradition. So it's very hard for them to defend, their rituals and their rights and explain it to sort of bureaucrats. But, it's a very, very important area for the Gamilaroi people, and they've been fighting it since 2013 and have got nowhere with Santos nor with the New South Wales government. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
No, it did. Thanks, Carl.
The next question I want to just sort of ask is, I kind of want to hear your comments on the government's COVID kind of 19 recovery plan, which is being rolled out by the federal government, by their so-called National COVID-19 Coordinating Committee. And it's based entirely on public handouts to the corporate gas sector. I kind of want to hear your comments on that, especially in relation to this ongoing struggle to protect the bushland of the Pilliga.
All right, yes. I think this is really important. We must see the struggle against Santos and the Pilliga in the context of what's happening nationally. And there's a very good article in the current Green Left Weekly, I should mention, which is headed Gas Recovery Formalises Corporate Rule. And really, this is what we're talking about. The federal government has brought in the so-called COVID Commission, which is supposed to oversee plans for, quotes, recovery from the COVID crisis. And they're focusing on gas. So the question of these new gas projects that are being pushed, actually not just in the Pilliga, not just in New South Wales, but around the country, is actually a critical issue for both economically, but also around the climate, because there's a complete myth. They're pushing the myth through this COVID commission that somehow gas is a so-called transition fuel away from coal, which is, you know, the key fossil fuel. Somehow it's a transition fuel towards full renewables, but is totally incorrect, because while gas, when it burns, does produce less carbon dioxide than coal, it's something like 60% more, I think the figure is. It creates methane, not only in the production, but not only in the production, because there's methane, so-called fugitive emissions, but also in the production of the power. So I think what we're looking at with the struggle in the Pilliga is really an iconic struggle, which is at the forefront of the whole struggle we're going to have to launch nationally. Now, look what's happening around the country. In the Northern Territory, there's supposed to be a ban on fracking for gas. But that ban is being lifted, and in fact there's an election coming up, which both sides of politics, Labor and the Country Liberal, are supporting the idea of lifting the ban. So the Aboriginal people in Northern Territory are really standing up and opposing that. In New South Wales, we've got the Pilliga. We've got a question mark in Victoria at the moment as to what's happening. And in Western Australia, you've got you know, the mining companies going berserk, and not only gas, but of course iron ore and coal. So, and then of course we've got the Adani project. So we've got a really critical point coming out of this COVID crisis to get back on the streets and get back campaigning as we have in the past around the whole question of Australia being something like the top producer of greenhouse gases in the world per capita. We've got to do something about it. We've got to also link up the struggle against coal, which is, you know, particularly the question of Adani in Queensland, but also Whitehaven Coal has just got to go ahead not far from where the Pilliga is. So remember, there's massive coal production in the Hunter Valley and in the Upper Hunter and all the way up to Bogger Bri and so on. But the gas is now being presented, and it's being falsely presented to the Australian people as though it's some kind of alternative coal, and that it'll be a transition to full solar and wind and other greenhouse neutral methods of producing energy. So, yeah, I think this National COVID Commission, it's completely stacked with pro-gas people. I mean, Nev Power, the head of it, was until very recently the head of one of the key, he was head of actually a gas company called Strike Energy. So because of the controversy, he was forced to resign formally. But this doesn't alter the fact, if you look at the personnel, a lot of them are from gas companies. And so, yeah, I think we're looking at a major struggle, which the Pilliga is probably like a spearhead part of, against the rise of gas as the so-called alternative fuel. So I'll just mention that now the decision of the Independent Planning Commission in New South Wales about Santos is going to be a critical point. They have now delayed their decision until the end of September. It was originally going to be September 5, I think it was. Now it's September 30. Santos panicked because 98% of the submissions to the commission were adamantly opposed to it. And the evidence, not only from the community and from Aboriginal groups, green groups and farmers, was so strong, but the technical arguments against it, the fact that there's a bogus argument in New South Wales that somehow Santos will reduce gas prices to consumers in the city. This is absolute rubbish. It's not going to happen. And in fact, Santos did not even succeed in putting that argument very strongly. So they sort of appear to have panicked and put a last minute submission in, which is, you know, raising the so-called numbers of the arguments in favour of their proposition. But the commission, fortunately, also decided to extend it because they said, well, people have to have a chance to reply. So we're going to see quite a lot of opposition now coming from experts and from the community to refute this latest attempt by Santos to shore up its very, very weak case. Watch this space. The struggle around the Pilliga is probably going to be one of the critical struggles, probably along with Adani, in the next few months.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll maybe conclude this interview. Do you have any guests' final comments you would like to kind of make?
Well,
and don't even talk about the forum you're going to be speaking at next Tuesday, actually, about this whole issue.
Yes, that's what, Jacob, what I was hoping to just give some publicity to your listeners, that next Tuesday night, 6:30 Eastern Standard Time, Coral and I will be speaking and showing a slideshow about our trip to the Narrabri and to the Pilliga. But also we have a feature guest speaker, Bronwyn Evans, who's a knitting nana, and we shouldn't finish up without mentioning the role, the vanguard role of the knitting nanas. People will have probably seen them in the media. They're dressed in the yellow beanies or black and yellow, and they in Sydney, they have little groups all over the place, the Illawarra, Sydney, Newcastle, and up in the north, and well, around the country as far as I'm aware. But they, until COVID, they actually, for a number of years, every Friday, they would be in Martin Place here in Sydney and getting signatures on their petition. And they have been absolutely staunch in campaigning against, well, not only Santos in the Pilliga, but the whole gas industry as a whole. So Bronwyn Evans, one of the members of Knitting Nanas here in Sydney, will be also speaking at the forum. So it's the Green Left Forum. Please look it up on Facebook. It's Tuesday, 25th of August at 6:30. There's a Facebook event which will give you the Zoom connection, and it should be really interesting. We're expecting to have a number of people who will be contributing in discussion about this important struggle.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for that, Jim. And I guess just for listeners' information, if you go on the Green Left Facebook page or the Green Left website, greenleft.org.au, you should be able to find details for this upcoming forum on the Pilliga, which is next Tuesday via Zoom at 6:30 p.m. All right. Now, I just want to I'll just quickly play a quick announcement, and then we'll move on to the rest of our program. But thank you very much, Jim and Carl, for being part of the program this week.